Hello, and welcome to today's Smart Money Chicks Lunch Money podcasting series. Today we have with us Erica Sandberg. Erica is the author of Expecting Money, The Essential Financial Plan for New and Growing Families, and is a columnist and reporter for creditcards.com, gobankingrates.com, and can also be found online on the San Francisco Chronicle's sfgate.com. Erica is frequently seen on ABC's News Good Money, CBS Money Watch, and Forbes Video Network, along with Fox Business News. Erica's articles and insights are featured in the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, Pregnancy, and Red Book Magazine, and can be found online at msn.money.com and smartmoney.com. Prior to launching her own writing and consulting business, she was affiliated with Consumer Credit Counseling Services of San Francisco for over 10 years. Erica is a member of the Society of American Business Editors and the National Society of Newspaper Columnists. Welcome, Erica, and thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Great, great. We love the title of your book, Expecting Money, The Essential Financial Plan for the New and Growing Families. That seems like that's so timely and relevant.
Yeah, you know, it is, and it's funny because when I wrote the book because there wasn't a book on the subject. A lot of personal finance books definitely touch on the importance of planning for, a new family and that type of thing. But there wasn't really one specific book on it, which when I was pregnant, that's what I was looking for. being in personal finance, I thought, well, okay, someone's got to tell me how much it's going to cost. What should I spend my money on? You know, what should I avoid? Really, I mean, like, what is it? What is maternity leave all about? And so I thought it was just really important and just a guide. So that's, that's definitely where the book came from, and very timely because as soon as it came out, the economy started tanking, and it definitely became more critical to a lot of parents out there.
Yeah, we love it. I actually just purchased it for my brother and sister-in-law, and they already have their first child. But what was really interesting is that they didn't know, even though they were expecting, they didn't know to sign up for, like, short-term disability or sign up for some of the other benefits because it had just been those two for so long. So they knew that the baby was covered when they had insurance, but there were some other financial things that they didn't actually kind of know to do ahead of time, whereas, you know, if they had that book ahead of time, you know, it probably would have helped them out tremendously when it came to their
finances.
Oh, yeah.
A little preparation goes a long way. Absolutely.
Well, definitely. Well, I wanted to talk to you about credit because that seems to be, one of your many expertise, and our Smart Money Chicks community can certainly use more information about that. So I wanted to ask you, we know that the new, the Credit Card Act of, like, 2008 has kind of finally rolled out and has been implemented fully now that we're, like, in 2011. Can you share with us some of the big changes that maybe people have seen with the new Credit Card Act, kind of what some of those guidelines or rules were?
Sure. I mean, the two big ones that I happen to really like the first one is really about that disclosure form that you get when you first sign up for a credit card. And, it's everything has to be big, bold, clear, one page. So you're not reading fine print. In fact, they even took away the fine print. Everything has to be published in 12-point font. So, I mean, that's a pretty big difference between, I think, what before it was something like 3-point font, if anybody's familiar with, the font system. It's tiny. And even something as simple as putting it in big black letters. This is what the terms are. This is what will happen if you don't pay. These are the fees. These are the fines. This is the APR. This is the introductory rate. And it's really big and bold and clear. I think that's wonderful. Such a simple change. So simple. It was something that needed to be done a long time ago. You know, and instead of having a couple pages, it's condensed. It's condensed into one. So people aren't mired in just junk and legalese. It's more clear than ever. I love that. The other aspect of the Card Act that I really like and a lot of people will not agree with me, but you know, I'm more than happy to have a delay put on young people getting credit. And now, it's important to borrow. It's important to learn how to do it correctly and all of that. But it was so ridiculously easy for college students, college age students, to get their first credit card, have large lines of credit, and get into deep into debt well before they even got their first job. So, you know, the CARD Act really stepped in and said, well, you know, we have to have this guaranteed by a parent. You know, if they are able to get a line of credit, they have to have a job. They have to prove source of income, kind of important. So okay. It's just, you know, it's just tightened up those particular rules. And, you know, I never liked, and you see it all the time, I never liked the idea of somebody graduating from college. Not only do they have student loan debt, they've got pretty bad credit card debt. And it really, it puts you behind right away, and it makes you desperate and feel crappy. And, you know, that's just no way to start out your life.
Well, we completely agree with that. And one of the things, well, not only that, we think a lot of people tend to make mistakes in college, you know, around college age. So we definitely thought that was really, really important. And that kind of leads us right into our next question. I know today it was kind of released, or it became, you know, big news that student loan debt has outpaced credit card debt.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have any advice when it comes to maybe working, kind of tackling the student loan debt, or even if maybe the terms are unfavorable? We know you've kind of, I know that you've written about that before.
Yes, I do. And this is going to be coming down to personal responsibility and working really, really hard and realizing that, you know, at all ages, especially, but you know, when you've hit the 18-year-old mark, at all ages, you are capable of doing a heck of a lot more than you think you are. Therefore, this it's sort of almost like a weak thing where you just borrow to the maximum. You don't need to take out all these student loans. You can live on top ramen.
Right.
You can do it. You can have the I mean, you don't have to have a car. You don't even have to have a cell phone. I mean, which sounds crazy, you know. But it's remember that you don't have to borrow quite so much. And people take out the maximum all the freaking time without thinking. You're
right.
Gonna have to pay it back. It's don't do it. Don't saddle yourself with so much debt. It's going to be a big pressure, and you can't do anything about it. It's there. You can't declare bankruptcy. You're stuck with it. So, I mean, that's really the first thing is scale back. You know, it's just because you can doesn't mean you should.
I love that. Just because you can does not mean you should. Because when it comes to student loan debt and even credit cards, well, that's what are people buying houses too. Well, they approved me for X amount, but knowing that we may never be able to pay that back.
Oh, totally. I mean, you know, picture it. I love analogies. So picture it. You know, you're hungry. You need food, right? So you walk into your kitchen and you open up your refrigerator door. You've got a fridge full of food. Does this mean you eat everything? No, I mean, you eat sparingly. You eat just what you need. Otherwise, you're going to get sick. And that's really what I think a lot of student loans kind of come down to is people eat so much they get sick. They borrow so much they feel horrible in the end.
Yeah. Well, that is really, really important. And I actually, you know, we have an attorney in our community who is making a decent living, but, you know, she's an attorney. So she has the potential to earn, you know, quite a bit of money, you know, quite a bit more than she's making now, but she's working in, you know, an area of law that she really, really enjoys, but she's saddled with so much credit card debt. And she said, you know, saddled with so much student loan debt. And she said, you know, I probably didn't have to take out as much as I did my first couple of years of college. You know, I probably could have waited a little bit until, you know, I went to law school. And so now, you know, the amount that she has to pay back is just, you know, really, really daunting. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You definitely bring up a great point. Well, tell us, what are some steps that we can take to improve our credit score if it's not really where we want it to be now? And maybe there's some things that we can do that you can share with us?
Absolutely. You know, credit scores are really important, and certainly the most common scoring model is the FICO score. So I want, you know, people to kind of focus. There are others, I mean, but that's the one that most lenders are going to be looking at. So, I mean, it ranges. It ranges from a score, the lowest, which almost nobody has, but the lowest of 300, and it goes all the way up to 850. So you want to get as close to 850 as possible. Just as recently as a couple of years ago, a good solid score was in the mid-600s. Yeah, I mean, that's just, you know, it's not bad, it's not good, it's fine. You know, you'll get by with it. Now, you want to begin with a score. You want to have a score at 720 and above. So, I mean, it's really crept up. Yeah. So check your score. See where it is. You know, you can do it. You could get it through MyFICO, which is the company that developed the scores. You can get it through the credit bureaus. You can go to one of these monitoring services where you get all of your scores. But just get them. Okay, so do get them. Find out where you are. Make sure you get all three. And then you're going to want to build it. But I want to have a little caveat here. Not everybody needs great credit. I mean, my gosh, you know, if you're not going to borrow, you're not going to buy a house, you're not going to get insurance, you're not going to buy a car, you're just not going to take out a loan, okay, you know, then maybe you're not going to look for a job, then maybe credit's not that important, but pretty much everybody else it is. So know where you are, you know, your score doesn't define you, it's just sort of, it's for a purpose. So pretty easy to have a great credit score. I mean, in fact, it's ridiculously easy. These are the things that you need to do. The first thing is you have to make all of your payments on time. Never, ever, ever miss a payment. Never let an account go into collections. You know, just keep your payment history pristine. So that's the first one. I mean, that takes 35% of your credit score right there.
That seems really simple.
So simple. So simple. You can even make it simpler without, you know, obviously go online and just do automatic bill pay. There you go. It's easy. It's little clicks, you know. You know, set yourself some reminders. It's just really easy. And no, I'm not saying, and I'm going to back up for a second, I'm not saying that people don't make mistakes, because they do, and everybody does. But don't worry so much about one late payment that happened in a 12-month period. Not such a big deal. But if it's a perpetual problem, that's going to be a major issue. So you have to deal with that. So the next most important thing to build up that credit score, very easy to do, is to keep your debt as low as possible, if not zero. There's this big, stupid myth out there, which drives me bonkers, saying that, bankers and lenders and everybody, they want to see you have debt. You can't, you know, the only way you could have a good credit score is if you have debt. Completely false. Totally get it out of your head. They want to see that you can borrow and repay. That's it. So, yes, they do expect you to use credit. So that you have to do in order to build a good credit score. But just repay it. You know, repay it every month. You don't need to keep a balance. In fact, you shouldn't, because the amount you owe in relation to the amount you can take out, that's the next most important factor. So you want to keep it to zero. If not zero, as close to zero as you can. That's 30% of the score. So you just add those two together and you have 65%. You're going to be great.
Yeah,
that's
definitely. Definitely.
So, you know, concentrate on the top. You know, a lot of people, when they think about their credit score and their credit reports, they're focusing on these, like, funky factors that don't really mean that much. Like,
not
inquiries.
Really.
Like, oh, my goodness, you know, somebody's going to pull up my credit score, and, you know, and then they'll have an inquiry. And it's just nonsense. It's only, first of all, inquiries are only 10% of your score. So get that out of your head right away. That's not that big of a deal.
Well, that makes perfect sense, because you can control making your monthly payments on time, and you can control, you know, the amount of debt that you have, whereas with inquiries, you know, you can have control over that, but at the same time, it doesn't count as much. The calculation is not nearly as high. So it makes so much more sense to kind of focus on those two big things that you named for us. So,
Definitely. You know, and the other thing that you can't control, just real quickly, is the length of time that you've had credit. So if you're just starting out, you know, what are you going to do? You know, you can't make it so that you've had 5 years of a good payment history and all of that. So just relax about that. You know, it will happen. So anyway, go on.
No, we completely appreciate that. For those in our community that have had issues kind of with their credit and now they're getting, you know, calls maybe all day long, you know, calls at home and maybe that aren't the most ethical, is there maybe a guideline or something that we can work on when we're receiving, you know, these 10 or 15 calls a day from creditors, and we know that maybe, you know, maybe they're calling first thing in the morning, like at 7 in the morning or, you know, 10 at night, and it seems like it just does not make sense or it shouldn't be allowed, you know, by law.
Yeah, well, and it's not. I mean, that's the thing is that just because a set of laws are in place doesn't mean that people don't break them. People break laws all the time. So the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act is an extremely powerful law. It's federal, and it stipulates what a third-party collector can do in order to collect on that debt. So it's very clear. They cannot harass you. They cannot call you repeatedly. Calling repeatedly means more than once a day. If they are calling twice, three times, four times, they're breaking the law. And so somebody who's getting that phone call needs to let them know that you know what the law is. It's the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, and that if they continue to do it, if the next time that they call again in a 24-hour period, then you're going to report them to the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, which governs it. So, you know, they don't want to get a fine. If you know what the law is and you explain that your knowledge base, you know, the chance of them treading on the law is much, much less. This is not to say, though, that they'll ignore you. I mean, that they'll respect that, you know, but that's
right.
Going to be up to you to really to get on it and to file a complaint. Yeah, and they can, like, swear at you, and you can't go to jail. And, oh, this is a good one. So important for people who have collection accounts. So often a collector will call and they'll say, well, we're just going to take your stuff. We're going to get your car. We're going to take everything in your bank account. Okay, they cannot do that unless they sue you in a court of law, win, and then get a judgment, have the judge grant them the ability to place a lien on or levy property. They have to take those steps, and they cannot tell you they're going to do it unless they really will. So unless they're really the next phone call you get is going to be, we're taking you to court, they cannot threaten you. That's an idle threat, and that's totally illegal.
Wow, I'm glad you shared that with us. I know there's probably that's really, really helpful because they get a little firm with you and people are scared and they want to scare people, but I don't know if that, you know, necessarily helps them pay a bill quicker or if it just stresses them out. And,
right.
You know, that's not good for any of us.
They just want the money, you know, that's what they want. So throw them the money and they'll stop.
Right, yeah. So, we have one more question before we finish up. And I wanted to ask, since we know, even though we've talked about credit today, you are certainly, you know, well-versed and a personal finance expert on many things. So can you share with us maybe two or three tips that a person can do overall to, you know, improve their financial situation?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The first one is to pay close attention to your money. You know, it's so easy to concentrate on everything else in your life, your boyfriend, your kids, your job, I mean, even just like, you know, the day-to-day operations of your job, going shopping, eating, all these things, you know, I mean, like, but make time for your personal finances. That's the most important thing that you can do in order to get control, because it's so easy to let it just slip away, not know what your balances are, not know how much money you have in your accounts, let those payments, you know, go a little bit late sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So just give yourself a little time. Maybe if it's even like half an hour a day, you know, where you just check your balances. Give yourself that. I mean, we all work pretty hard for our money, so give it a little bit of attention. The second most important thing to do is to realize that you don't have to spend money on everything. Really refine your spending. Learn to say no to yourself. It's so difficult in the beginning to do that because it's really easy to rely on credit or just to overspend. Scale back. Just scale back spending. You know, just let yourself get rid of a couple of different expenses that really are not that important to you and focus on the ones that are. So, for example, I happen to love eating out, and I'm going to spend my money on eating out. I don't care that much about getting my nails done or, you know, pedicures and that type of thing. I'll do it my own. I'm not going to spend the money on. So make these choices that make perfect sense to you, and you will live a happy life and a much more prosperous life.
Right.
So those are the first two. And, you know, if you want to have another one, I would say that reduce borrowing to the bare minimum. Really, I mean, don't borrow. Use your credit cards as a payment tool. Don't think of them as a loan. Think of them as a payment tool.
Excellent, excellent. That is a really, really, really great point. Well, we know that we can find you on your website, of course, which is ericasandberg.com. And you also do a, is it a weekly or a monthly column with creditcards.com?
I have a weekly advice column on creditcards.com. You can write to me. I will hopefully, I get a lot of letters, but, you know, I'll take out the ones that I think are most relevant to everybody, and I'll answer it. You'll get that. I also have, you can find me on the Chronicle on SF Gate. So, and even though that's San Francisco Bay Area, you know, it's national. So jump on, and I love to hear comments. I love it, love it, love it. So, you know, tell me what you think about money. I want to know.
Well, yeah, and then we actually have quite a few in our community that live in, you know, San Francisco or even in Oregon or kind of closer to the, you know, West Coast. So luckily we have this huge, huge expansive community that's like all over, you know, the world actually. So that's been really, really great for us. We want to thank you so much for spending time with us today. Once again, this is Andrea with SmartMoneyChicks.com, our Lunch Money podcasting series. We'll see you on the site.